The years leading up to and during menopause are a rite of passage. The wise woman inside of us is calling to slow down, to take stock, to speak our truth, to burn away all that no longer serves us, ready for our next cycle of life. The good news is, with the support, community, connection, and most of all, sharing our stories and being truly seen and heard, we will travel through this powerful, sometimes painful, heroine's journey and out the other side. Welcome to the Menopause Podcast, real and raw stories of midlife and mental health. I'm your host, Kylie Patchett, menopause self-care coach and storyteller, and I am so glad you found us. Let's get on with the show. We start every single show with a little happy dance. I wish people could see this. I am wiggling today because I am about to start a conversation with the beautiful Deb Benfield. Hello, Deb. How are you?
Hello. Thank you so much for having me here.
We are just about to dive into one of my most favorite topics. For those ladies in the audience that don't already know you, would you like to introduce yourself and what you do in the world?
Yes, I am a registered dietitian, and I have been for more than 35 years, yes, specializing in preventing and treating eating disorders. Mm-hmm. And my passion currently is working with women who are midlife and older, who really want to push back against all the social constructs about our aging bodies and find some liberation there. And I'm very kind of in love with it right now. So it's going to be an interesting conversation.
I love that you're in love with it because I don't know whether you actually already know, but I am in eating disorder recovery. So this is a topic very close to my heart. And it's interesting. I don't know. I always trust the timing of our lives, right? I always end up, yes, having conversations just when they're, because I've just gone through, after 2 solid years of recovery and not following any food rules and none of this weird crazy making, yes, things that can happen in your mind with eating disorder, just, yes, lately have gone down the track in my brain of like, really do need to find the answer to fixing this body. And I'm like, whoa, like how, after, like, I'm talking 2 solid years, and it shouldn't surprise me because I've had disordered my entire life, but let's start there with, how do you think, because you've done this for such a long time, so you've been working, yes, with people with disordered eating and recovery for quite a long time, how does the midlife and beyond piece change the story around the disordered eating or the disordered body image? I'm really interested to hear.
Wow. We can speak the rest of the time in answering that question.
I know.
Start with the big one. I have several different theories. Yeah. One of them is based on Sonia Renee Taylor's work, mm-hmm, around, like, that we actually live in a body hierarchy, and people can't see the motion I'm making with my hands. I'm building a hierarchy,
yes,
with my hands.
I like it. I like it. It's, and a pyramid in hands.
It is. Exactly.
Yep.
And at the top, of course, we have this default body that is thin and young and able-bodied, mm-hmm, and neuronormative and, mm-hmm, cisgendered and, you know, et cetera, all the things.
Yeah.
And that default body, or folks that carry those attributes, have like natural access to the power and a sense of belonging and safety. Mm. And so when you're in the thing other, literally other than, yep, that, mm-hmm, you lose a sense of safety and power. So, of course, as you age, and or if your body is not thin, you feel less safe. And people literally can sense this change as you age. It's a feeling that you get. Mm-hmm. And my clients, of course, describe what happens when their bodies change too. Yeah. They don't feel as safe when they're not as thin as before. So there's a natural pull toward passing as young, passing as thin. Of course, there's a vulnerability that is very real to diet or to do all the things to look younger, right? Mm. It's very understandable. And I have a lot of compassion for people who feel that.
Yeah.
I understand it.
I'm wondering, as you're talking, because in some ways, the sense of being less safe, you know, in some ways is to do with this system of oppression, this hierarchy of bodies,
yes.
of shall we say, the rightest body on top and the least right, I don't know what language you want to say, but anything other than. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, I'm actually picturing almost like a Barbie-like body, mm-hmm. like, you know, the thin mm-hmm. blonde head, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this sense of lacking or losing safety is in one part imagined because of that system of oppression, but in another sure. part very much backed up by mm-hmm. that system of oppression. But also mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think something I was just sharing with you before we started recording, I've just discovered that I've got this ligament thing going on that's a disorder mm-hmm. I've had for my entire life, but is showing up much more in perimenopause. And yes. all of a sudden, my version of my aging body, which has always been based on my 91-year-old father who was still, you know, striding around doing a kilometer of walking morning and evening and still driving a car, like that to me in my mind has always been the way that I'm going to age.
Right.
And then all of yeah. a sudden I'm starting to get these questions of like, wow, if this pain is like this and I'm only 48, what happens? And so do you feel like there is imagined loss of safety and then real loss of safety and then this mobility yeah. or pain yeah. or whatever changes as well that
yeah.
they do to me feel like mm-hmm. a shifting foundation. I don't know whether I would yes. use the word safety, but I feel like that's a contributing factor.
Yeah, the fact that perimenopause reminds you that indeed you don't have control.
No.
That your body is going to shift and change.
Yeah.
And certainly yeah. from then on, there are going to be changes in how you experience your life through your body. Mm. So, yes, that's real. I agree. And how we respond to that, of course, there could be fear. There could be like feeling desperate, like white knuckling around trying to control, you know, increasing. So yes, I agree. There are things that are very real and there are stories that we tell ourselves that we're sold, that we inherit. Right. It's yeah. a combination.
100%. 100%. Yeah. I yeah. love the way that you put it. You have this beautiful saying of, when you're thinking about the relationship with your body is not a project, it's your partner.
Yes.
And that is such a key shift, isn't it? Even feeling like to me in my body, those two things feel very different.
Yes.
And yeah. it's been interesting navigating this voice. And I totally understand that the voice, the part of me that is trying to say, you know, this has gone too far. You've put on too much weight. You are now like it's almost like a danger signal, like the canary in the coal mine. Like, if you don't fix this now, you're never going to fix it. It's like, whoa, even just the fixing language again is back to project. And it's also back to trying to, there's a grasping. When you are in the changing perimenopause, because the other thing I feel like for me with perimenopause, I've always had this thought of myself as, oh, exactly like I said, I'm just like, you know, healthy as a horse, you know, my body's fine, everything. And then all of a sudden I find myself on like 5 medications and all these doctors and specialist appointments. And I think, holy moly, that my entire kind of self-identification is being put under a microscope. And so it's not surprising that because for someone or anyone who has ever had an experience of, you know, going on this desire to change the shape of their body or change something about their body, there is a sense of control that you get from that, or at least for me, and I will talk about my own experience. I won't tell everyone what they're thinking, that the control gives you a false sense of safety. And that, I think, is what I've been seeking. So it's not about the body. It's not about anything to do with that. And so when people are looking for that sense of control, and you said before, you know, you're deeply compassionate about it, how do you help people shift from grasping for that control to being more, well, in partnership? What does that look like? I mean, and again, that's a huge question. I know you're probably waiting. People have over years to do this, but what are some of the things that we can feel into for ourselves?
When I think about, well, I'll just start with one kernel of what I think you're getting at, and that is, what is it like to actually develop a, what I would hope would be healthy, for lack of a better word, relationship? Like, we know what that looks like in our other relationships. Like, to offer listening and attention and connection. And asking for consent and trust, the building trust. In my mind, is the same, applying what we know with how you relate to your own body. So what would that look like? The listening piece, like checking in with yourself as you go through your day. Like, just, I put my hand on my heart every time I do this, because that's what I do in my life, is like a kinetic connection with a part of me that kind of prompts that check-in. And to really give myself a chance to slow down and listen to my body's response and wisdom, and honoring that, trying not to push it away. And the consent asking is, I know, kind of an odd concept, but actually, like, checking in with your body is like, so, are you feeling thirsty? Do you feel like, I mean, before we started, we were talking about you being cold. I mean, do you need to go put socks on? Do you need, would hot tea feel nice? Do you need to take a break and put everything down and give yourself, you know, 5 to 20 minutes to rest? Do you, does this really taste good? Is this, is eating this, you think, going to make you feel the way you want to feel? Is it energizing? Is it comforting? Like, a literally relationship. I believe that there's huge healing capacity in shifting into that.
And it feels good. Gentleness.
Gentleness. And I perhaps should offer a caveat here, because it's not always safe to be in your body, right? If you've had trauma, if you've been through harsh experiences with dieting and eating disorder, sometimes it doesn't feel safe to be in your body. There's a lot that you're trying to escape there. So walking toward your own body relationship, you know, can be very slow, can be small steps. But there's an awful lot of freedom and a different kind of safety there.
As you're speaking, I'm just imagining, like, you know, my most treasured, like, relationships. Like, I've got a dear, dear friend in Sydney who's going through something really hard at the moment. And I just think, oh, get myself emotional.
Yes, I understand.
But that gentleness and compassion that I would offer in any other relationship in my life. I'm only just on the beginning of the journey of offering that to myself in any capacity. And I think what you said before about not feeling safe in your body, I had many unsafe experiences as a kid, and that definitely has colored my relationship with my body, because I have literally, I don't feel like I have been in my body until perimenopause pulled me into my body. And whilst that is deeply uncomfortable at times, it is such a deep gift, because it's making me realize, like, I had a moment as you're talking last night. I quite often, especially when I'm writing copy, you know, it's one of the other things that I do, and I was writing copy, and I hadn't been able to kind of get, I often will have this sort of idea of a thread of something that I wanted, you know, write about, and then the writing just comes, and the thread was there, but I couldn't, I don't know, I couldn't quite pull on it. And then all of a sudden at about 6 o'clock, which would usually be my well and truly I'm done for the day, I'm, you know, packing up shop, I just got this, and I kept writing. I kept writing and I was so cold in my body and my feet were icy because I'd had my windows open. I'd closed the windows, but I hadn't gone the next step of, you know, I will so often do that where I will ignore thirst or, and I'm just like, I'm not in my body. It's this basic honoring. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning I have a program called Soothe, and at the beginning of that, we talk about, you know, if you walked into a room and there was a baby crying in a crib, what would you do? And we all know what we would do. Like we would pick up, we would coddle, we could, we would whisper, we would, you know, feed, clothe, you know, all of those things. We would gently rock, we would, but, and the reason why I teach Soothe is very much about this reconnection to, can we tend to our own needs?
Yes.
Exactly. And for me, I think the biggest thing is you can't tend to your own needs when you're not listening in the first place.
No, no, and that, no awareness.
No. Right. Mm-hmm. And so this, the checking in and the, for me, I know not everyone's a journaler, but I actually talk to my body in my journal, which sounds a bit weird, but
sounds wonderful.
What messages do you have? And particularly when there's, you know, pain and discomfort, it's like, okay, how can I most take care of you? But I feel like I've got like little, what are those little training wheels on? You know, I'm only just, I'm only just on my little kind of body connection bike. When we're not connected to our bodies, have you read The Wisdom of Your Body by Hilary Mac?
Yes. Yes.
I only
yes.
just read it a couple of weeks ago. Yes. I really, really loved the way that she was talking about it. When you feel into the pattern of people with eating disorders, what would you say about the relationship that people have with their body when they have that disordered, you know, because there's such a big, it's like a whole picture thing, isn't it? Can we talk to that for a bit?
Sure. Are you saying, can we talk about her or talk about?
Oh, no, not her specifically, but just I liked the
question.
I liked the way that she explained the eating disorder kind of slippery slide when you're not in your body. Because when you're not in your body, it is much easier to ignore and not tend to those needs, isn't it?
Right. And we are praised. There's so much praise for the kinds of things that happen there when you don't take the time to eat. I mean, so many of my clients tell me about, you know, upbringings or relationships where there was praise for not stopping and taking the time to eat.
Yeah.
It's, we tend to drive ourselves and honor productivity and other things above. Slowing down and saying, I need, like, is it okay to acknowledge that I need a sandwich?
It's crazy, isn't it? When you,
yes, I need to take a break. I need to get a breath of fresh air. I mean, it's hard for us to acknowledge that we need. There's a vulnerability, I suppose.
Why, though? Is it the productivity thing? Is it, like, I know a lot of people in my circle would say it's a bloody patriarchy. Like, they started that, you know, 5-day week. And I think that there is a flavor of that. But
oh, for sure. No question.
Is it, I don't know. I think my generation definitely got sold the you can have it all idea. And I think that no one ever put the late postscript on the end, but not all at the same time. Like I feel like I definitely drank the Kool-Aid of having it all, like it, you know, worked. And I look back at, I've talked about this before on this podcast. I was pregnant with my first daughter and I was managing a sleep and respiratory company. And so if someone didn't turn up for their night shift, I would just work a second 12-hour shift. And I was pregnant, didn't think two things of it. And I would almost, no, not almost, I'm going to be honest, I would feel this great sense of like, okay, you know, no one else will do it, or I won't ask anyone else to do it, but I'm the leader. I will, you know, and I'm like, my, what's that word? My currency was working hard. And, you know, we could go down a whole other track of
where and I your identity. At. Yeah. Your identity. Absolutely. About 100%. What you're capable of. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love one of the very first times that I really learned how not in my body I was as a younger person. I went to, my kids were only little. I was working in medical science, and I very quickly figured out that the way that science and medicine pulls people apart into all the different organs, I just didn't agree with, and it doesn't work. Yeah. And I was just like, can you not see that, you know, like I just did not make any sense. Anyway, so I went seeking other answers, and I went to study traditional Chinese medicine, but the teacher was also a yoga teacher. And so we used to do yoga 3 times a day when I was studying, which was just delightful. But he used to say to me, he would often say, just because you can doesn't mean you should. I was like, that was the repeated thing because, and I guess for me, skeletally, or not skeletally, but joint wise, I can go way further than what you should. And so I feel like it's kind of like my life lesson. But it's like, I guess the journey that I'm on, it sounds like a similar one to what you work with, is the, how do you disconnect the, I don't know what it is, the dopamine hit or the whatever it is that you get, the secondary gain you get from the pushing through.
Right.
Like last night, go and get a pair of socks on, turn a heater on. You can still write, like you don't have to inch, but I just get so excited.
Yes. And you get disembodied, right? Because you're like,
totally. So,
which makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. But so you have to bring yourself back.
Yeah. But it is that taking the time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with nourishment, it's the exact opposite, isn't it? So as a dietitian, do you have people still, when people come to you in midlife, what are their biggest struggle points? Like what do you see? It's this shift to somehow the lacking of safety if their body's changing. What else?
Yeah. And they're experiencing something new and different in that it's actually not new and different, but they're not remembering how it felt when they went through puberty.
Yes.
Or perhaps like if they did go through labor and breastfeeding, that there was a force of nature that was controlling your body.
Yep.
100%. And your body's size and shape, and it's happening again. So the starting line is many times what I've always done isn't working anymore. So what that many times means, my translation of that is I've been manipulating lots of things to maintain this one particular way of looking in my body, and it's slipping from my grasp. And what do I do? And so I can't do anything about them getting control over their body, but I can help them realize that it's okay and everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And actually there's cause for celebration in that. The concept of letting yourself go, and how much I love that phrase.
Yes, me too.
How much I celebrate that phrase every time I hear it. It's like, you've let go of the oppressive systems that you've been really allowing in.
Yeah.
Maybe you've let go of all of that. Yeah. And that's okay too. So that's...
It also... I have had experiences where when you say, particularly in friendship groups where I have previously bonded over this manipulation of your body.
Yeah.
Or that there's been a shared value of that. Like, oh my goodness, you look amazing,
for sure.
You know,
bloody
bloody blah. All of a sudden you must be a better person because you've lost 30 kilos.
It's you're doing something right. You're doing something right. Yeah.
And do you know what is most disordered about that whole dance, I think, is that when I, particularly the last time I will say that I joined a cult of dieting, which was a horrendous experience. But I was getting praise for my physical body, and yet mentally I was so unwell, unwell in the way that I was scared of eating off plan, or, you know, like I just so broken in the way that I viewed myself and my value and nourishing myself and all of those things. This program actually told people to just imagine chewing a food and just chew to stop being hungry, to get past hunger. And then
crazy town.
I came to my senses, Deb. I was like, what the F have I? What? Like, I think of myself as a fairly smart person, but not when it comes to, I feel like this is a huge blind spot for me and always
Isn't
has been.
Funny?
And so the letting yourself go, when I can find, when I can connect to my body and do that, because I feel like I wax and wane through that connection. And I think that that would be quite natural. It's like, you know, have moments like last night, but then other moments where, particularly because I have such a deep love of being on a yoga mat, I always say that's where I feel like I meet myself. I'm really in my body. And so I'm very much more connected, but that connection definitely waxes and wanes. But when I'm most connected to my body, my sense of letting everything go is this sense of complete freedom.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like I don't have to. Like if my body feels like something and I feel like it would be nourishing to feed myself, great. If my body feels like not, and I think this colors through the whole exercise thing in perimenopause as well, because I have gone through regimented exercise, like regimented exercise in my life, and then nothing, and then back to regimented. And, you know, I'm trying on for size again, this sort of like flowing through my own needs. But that deep sense of freedom, when you use the word liberation, what does that, if you could give people that are listening and they're like, I get what you're saying logically, but I cannot get a sense of what it would be like to live like that. Mm-hmm. Can you give us some words or some sensations about this body liberation that we can step into?
Yeah, I think other than what I've already said about allowing yourself to befriend and to really snuggle up with what your body is letting you know, I think there's also an expansion there. And that's just me personally.
Yeah.
I feel liberation feels like the horizon opening up.
Yeah.
There's like the barriers don't exist.
Yeah.
And it's just me and space. Mm. And, you know, I'm just picturing like a sunset in front of me right now. I'm just like meeting myself there, meeting myself in a space that is open, that is free of barriers, that allows me to move and play and be with my authentic self. Has anybody talked to you about the podcast Wiser Than Me?
No.
It's a podcast by Julia Louise Dreyfus.
Oh, I did just listen to the episode with Jane Fonda, but I didn't realize it was sent to me in a link. So I didn't realize Wiser was, okay.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to talk about, because there is a part of that interview where she talks about realizing through all of her therapy that her need to win her father's approval really kept her from her authentic self, like looking outward for approval and kind of losing herself in that way. And that in this third act, as she's calling this, there is an opportunity for her to really be much more connected to the authentic girlhood self. And I feel strongly that that connection is available through body only.
Yes.
Because that's where the girlhood self resides.
Yes.
And when we can drop away from the male gaze, all the things we've learned about how we should look.
Yeah.
when all of that is allowed to move out of our way,
mm-hmm.
then we have the opportunity to meet our girlhood selves. And
oh, I love that.
That is why I'm on fire about this whole thing, because I personally long for that. I long for that in my clients. I have two granddaughters that I can see yes. that spirit. And it's just such a beautiful opportunity to have that freedom, to have that liberation. So this is a very long answer to your question, but those are the pieces that kind of come to life for me when you ask that question.
Do you know what, when you say your girlhood self, I did not experience this much as a kid, but what I imagined for myself is playfulness, and children yes. are so responsive, aren't they? It's like, I'm hungry yes. or I want to go yes. run or I yes. want to, and there's no mm-hmm. filter mm-hmm. or censoring or like, mm-hmm. I, oh, but that's not the right thing to do or that isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I saw something. Yeah,
I appreciate you saying that because mm-hmm. I realized that not everybody has a girlhood that allows for that freedom. You're right.
But that doesn't stop you yearning for it. I think, right. and true. I wonder whether part of this safety valve mechanism that's coming to the surface looking for the control is actually because I'm getting closer and closer through the work that I'm doing with unwinding trauma to the sense of, the self that I could possibly have been. And I wonder whether I do a lot of things in parts works, and I wonder whether
yes
the part of me that is yeah. Feeling threatened by that is just putting off an alarm bell, because I felt really mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. settled and calm and connected for quite like for a long I think it's not even 2 years, I think it's almost 3 years since I opted out of the cult and did a lot of work with someone that was an eating disorder recovery specialist. But yes, my sense is that there's a little, still a bit of a wounded part of me that's still going, whoa, this is dangerous. You can't just do what you want, because that means that you're going to be, you know, mm-hmm. literally mm-hmm. in danger or, you know, mm-hmm. unsecure, mm-hmm. not attached, et cetera, et cetera. But as you're talking, I mean, this podcast used to be called Wild and Finally Fucking Free, because that is when I went to visit that beautiful friend I was talking about in Sydney about September last year, and I was still in a corporate job. There was a lot of things that were not right in my life in terms of the stresses that I was trying to manage, that I always have been able to manage and all of a sudden could not. Thank you, perimenopause, for the blessing of not having as much bandwidth to pretend I was okay. But I went and sat down by the water and I wrote, how do I really want to feel? And I just waited for the answer. And the answer mm-hmm. was wild and totally fucking mm-hmm. free. Yeah. And one of the biggest things
yeah.
that I wanted to be free of was the feeling like I had to think about, because there's so much energy and space that has been wasted in my life thinking about what is the right thing to eat, what is the right thing to do with my body, whether I've how much weight I have put on, how much, like, I would yeah. say probably 50% of the joy space or the delight or the liberation in my life has been stolen with all of that.
Yeah.
And I just, when you talk about liberation and particularly that expansiveness of a sunset, like I put myself right on a motorbike right in the middle of that. I love being on a bike and that's my freedom. If I think about great. Freedom, that's free, mm-hmm. particularly on a country road. On a perfect riding day, I don't ride a bike. I am on the back of a bike. Just, yeah. I'm not that brave yeah. yet. I really want to be, but I'm not quite. But that sense of expansiveness and freedom, to me, it's the space. There's all this space that was taken up with all of this trying to fix or projectify. I don't know whether that's a word, but I'm going to make it a word, my body. And, yeah, it's not there. And yeah. just in these recent few weeks where it's been popping up a lot more time and energy, and I'm like, I don't want to go back there. I don't want to because I feel like there's this great invitation in our midlife years to not take forward what we want yes. to be free from.
Precisely. Yeah. I love it. Yes. Yeah, so there is a true threshold and yeah. you have choices.
Yes.
If you're going to still carry all of that through the threshold with you, or if you're going to step into that yeah. wild and finally fucking free. Yes.
That is where, that's what my heart is calling me to do. And yeah, there's yes. just a little piece of this yes. wounded, and that's just showing me there's some mm. other, mm-hmm. there's some other loving to do, and that's okay. Yeah. You talk about this time of life being a time of emergence. And is yeah. that is that what you're talking about, this time mm-hmm. of like what mm-hmm. will we take with us? Because I feel like yeah. I feel like yeah. perimenopause is the equivalent of being in the messy goo of the chrysalis. Yes, you know, you when are. Everything goes yes, to genetic soup, that's what I feel like I'm in the yes. middle of.
Yes. And I am, you know, well postmenopausal, so mm. I have perspective on the energy and the access to yourself that you have mm-hmm. when the chrysalis stage is behind you. Mm. I feel strongly that what starts to emerge can be incredibly exciting.
Yes.
I mean, and this is my value system. I try yep. very hard to be careful about like projecting my values on others mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. feeling vital and excited about an adventure may not be what you're up to. It may be like you want some chill, you want yeah. some calm and comfort, you want some release away from,
yeah,
you know, an adventure. It could be lots of different things. Mm. There are so many ways to live a life, right? Yeah. So just giving yourself a chance to emerge into how you want to age.
Yeah.
To give yourself that sense of agency.
I want a hybrid of those two things. Like I want the adventure, and I want my dad was 55 when I was born, so I never knew him as a younger person, but he never mm-hmm. felt old to me. And I'm saying, and this is ageism alive and kicking in me, that what I used to think of as an older person, someone who's slowed down and is not so interested in life. Right. So let's put that, like, that is definitely, you know, that's a yes. belief system. So,
yes.
but mm-hmm. as I grew up, my sense of age was definitely invited to be one of vitality and interest. And my dad was a really funny, like a quirky sort of an Irishman, but I still have little sayings. When he died, I wrote down all of his little funny sayings he used to have. They used to call them spoonerisms. I don't even know whether that's a word anymore, but it just funny, like I can't even think of one now, but he had little ditties for things Yeah, anyway, I continue them. And even last night at the dinner table, my daughter's like, oh, that's grandpa all over again. I just feel like that kind of keeps him alive. But that kind of yes. zesty interest and fun and joyful and being yeah. light of heart, that yes. and he also had a best friend who I used to call Nana Said. And this is why when I stepped back into coaching straight away, my business is called The Radiance Revolution, because I have had many years of literally sitting at the feet of an older lady who has this, and she had one part gentleness, and, you know, she would never, if someone was saying, oh, what did such and such do? She'd say, well, you know, she'd always sort of see things from everyone's perspective, and she had this really soft, but she also had this zest for life and so many interesting stories and all of those things. And I'm like, that's the hybrid. Yes. That I want.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I feel like, I do understand what you're saying, that we can't put our value system. Yeah, other people may not want adventures. And
right.
But
right.
I'm just like, I would love to be the, you know, 80-year-old heading off to Tuscany for 6 months just for, you know,
yes. just yeah, for something. Sign me up. Sounds exactly. great.
We'll go yes. together.
Exactly. A little bit rebellious, a little bit yes. focused on vitality.
Yes, yes, yes.
And some gentle sweetness, sure. Yeah. But I love what you say about with that vitality.
Snuggling up with yourself. I feel like I am, it wintertime, I always feel like I want to hibernate. And when I did my traditional Chinese medicine study, like, you know, a big thing that stayed with me through that was, you know, the natural way of flowing through the seasons is that we do turn inward at winter and we do get quiet and we do sleep more and we do rest more and all of those things. And I've always had the want to do that, but I've always been in like a corporate pace where like you don't get to just like check out for the winter. Now in my own business again, I'm like, oh yeah, half days and snuggling with the pets with good books sounds really good.
Yeah. Really nice soup.
Yeah, I've been making, oh my goodness, I'm obsessed with, I've got a recipe, I've had it for years, but it's a mushroom soup, which is just mushroom and tamari and coconut milk at the end. And it is the most nourishing, like there's some, the flavor of it, the umami, however you say that, there's something really deeply nourishing my body. Just so that's very what I've been eating every
I just got very hungry.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'll send you the recipe.
Sounds great. Please.
That recipe has gone all over the world because I posted it on my Instagram the other day and I had like 20 people going, what is that? And I'm like, oh, it's super easy. It's just a link on the internet. I want to talk about the ageism end of things because as I just, you know, outed myself, my particularly as a younger person, you know, I saw these two examples of, you know, healthy, vital, positive, happy aging. And then anyone who felt to me, I don't know, old, and I don't mean chronologically old. To me, what I was feeling was old was being fixed in mindset, negative, cynical, you know, not warm and welcoming. Yeah, stuck. But that's not what aging has to be like. So can we talk about the ageism piece? Because I know you're passionate about this too. And I feel like
I am.
Yeah.
And
I need to be schooled.
I know that I am ageist. I mean, I think it's just like racism. I mean, it's we've all, you know, been breathing in this mess and it shows up. Yeah, it just shows up when I least expect it. So I just want to say I haven't got this figured out at all. I know that I still have, you know, threads of ageism, just like ableism, and they're all tied together.
It's, yes, they are indeed.
No shame, because we've all been fed this for eons.
Yes.
So just recognizing it, just as you just beautifully showed, like you just said something and you quickly notice what you said. And that's all I know to do is to say the story that we have about old being bad, old being that long list of things, just like the story that we have about fat being the same.
Yes.
Bad and all that list of things, they go together beautifully. So just kind of tuning into those two. Really hard stories that we carry about ourselves and others, but especially about ourselves.
And we've been swimming in an ocean, swimming in an ocean,
breathing it in, breathing it in.
And we don't even, it was like one of the very first things that the eating disorder recovery person I worked with asked me to do was to pay attention to the ocean I was swimming in terms of body image, particularly on social media. And I didn't even know I was swimming in an ocean. Like I really did not. Like, and again, I keep saying this, I probably should be doubting this, but I like to think of myself as a fairly aware person, but then I'm like, oh my God, every single account that I was following, because I have also studied nutrition, like lots of people that have disordered eating, looking for their own answers, you know, and so I was following a lot of like raw food people or keto people, you know, the answer kind of diet wise, but also just not having any different ages, bodies, like nothing. And as you say, they're all interconnected. And the weird thing, I've spent my corporate career has been in mental health recovery, aged care and disability services. Like you would think that my eyes would already be open. They weren't. And so then it was like, oh, okay, now I have to really, really think. With the ageism thing, I also feel like, I'm interested. I always feel that once I get to a certain age, this kind of relationship with my body and eating will just sort itself out, which I am very aware is not going to happen without work. What would you say to someone who says, oh, there wouldn't be any 70-year-olds with disordered eating or disordered body image?
Oh, I talk to them every day. I mean, that's not true at all.
Yeah, amazing.
For all the reasons that we've talked about. Mm. I mean, there's an increased vulnerability.
Yeah.
It's infuriating and heartbreaking that there is this machine of anti-aging and diet and wellness culture taking advantage of fear of losing relevance, fear of loss of independence, even though we can talk a lot about that, because actually it's very healthy to ask for help.
Yeah.
And it's actually a risk factor to not ask for help, to remain.
And
I mean, that increases your loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay to realize that we're all connected and we're all somewhat dependent, interdependent. Mm. And that's a much healthier perspective.
Yeah, 100%.
So the stories that we carry about what happens when we age sets us up for more involvement in diet and wellness culture or relapse into your old stuff.
Yeah.
So yes, I talked to a person in her 70s today. Yeah, it happens.
Oh, Deb, I'm so grateful that we're having this conversation and that your work is being shared with other people in this age group, because I feel like you are giving me the confirmation of the, if you go back to old ways, you're just continuing the pain. I could take up the next 30 years of my life trying to manipulate my body. Like I have the last 30 years of my life.
Many, many, many people do.
And I'm just like, no, I want, like, if I'm blessed with grandbabies, I want to be. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that actually terrifies me. Like, I can't go back in time and fix anything that I showed my daughters, but I don't want to be continuing it on for the next generation.
That's right.
Like, I just, you know, and I, I was talking to someone the other day and their granddaughter is not allowed sugar at all. No sugar, no sugary anything, not even banana. And I'm just like, oh my God, this just.
That's a real problem. And it's really
a huge problem.
Yeah. I can feel myself getting pulled into that conversation. There's a lot I could say. But the intergenerational relationships around food, nourishment, allowing pleasure, you know, allowing celebration with food.
Yes.
Allowing kids to figure out what they like and how much they like.
Yes.
You know, let them do that with themselves so that they can learn how to self-regulate, so they can feel confident.
Yeah.
So they feel comfortable in their bodies.
Yeah. I had the awful juxtaposition of one parent controlling everything I ate and also binge eating in front of me. And then also when things were going sideways as a kid, I used to go and hide food. So, you know, there's a perfect setup for a disordered relationship with, and I can look back now with compassion though. And this is, you know, directly as a result of the work that I've done over the last probably decade of, I used to be really angry at myself for my lack of control. The cult that I was in used to sell the concept of food addiction, which I actually don't believe in at all now. But anyway, I bought the Kool-Aid. But where I was going with that is one of the things that is a beautiful thing to experience, having stepped off that right and wrong way, you know, that sort of black and white way of seeing food. And one of the main reasons that every time I think, oh, I've got to fix this, I need to, then I come back to, but Sunday night dinner, because both my girls now have partners. And so Sunday nights often are around we've got a kitchen with a big extended table and we, you know, that's where we share a meal. And that is always something that I've held, you know, really special in my heart when I've imagined the future of those things. and maybe, you know, eventually grandbabies, not in any quick amount of time, they're only 18 and 19, but, you know, that joy of coming together and the joy of like making food for people. Like, I love cooking. Yes. And then it's like, oh, if I have to go back to something that's structured, then I can't, like, I'm like, no, I don't, I'm not willing to steal all that away from myself. And I think that, yeah, I mean, I'm by no means an expert in how kids should be with food, but I think my sense is that the more we let them to discover all different tastes and all different, you know, like one of my daughters was obsessed with vinegary stuff when she loved olives and like she used to eat like my dad because her and my dad were like joined at the hip and he used to love sour stuff. So he'd eat like pickled onions and olives and she will still get a jar of olives out of the fridge and drink all the juice out of it because she feels like something really sour. I'm like, makes my stomach burn.
No thanks.
But that has always been, you know, and maybe there's a little intertwining of a memory of dad that's in that as well. And I think that that's
probably,
you know, that the beautiful visceral memories we can have around food and
it lives in our bodies. It lives in our bodies. Well, so we have to have some connection and respect there.
So gorgeous.
To live full, exciting lives. And it's okay. There are all kinds of ways to have a body. So it's all, there are all kinds of ways. Can we just please let that be? Can we just please stop it with the thinking there's only one way to have a body? It's causing a lot of pain and heartache. And it increases as you age. Unless you actually decide to step over the threshold and let that go.
Yeah.
That can happen.
I'm just thinking about what you said about the interconnectedness with older people too. A big part of, as you're talking, I'm questioning my own stories. And this is what, this is why writing and coaching to me go together, because it's all about stories. It's all about the storytelling or the stories we tell ourselves. It's like my version of aging well is to be still independent because I'm fiercely independent. And actually what you're saying, and it's the same as, I mean, if we think about this, literally the cycle of life, like we start, you know, in baby and we're dependent on other people for our needs. It's actually very natural for us to come back to the same point. That's our design. And yet my story of aging was not to do that. So thank you for that as well, because.
Well, I think that's, I think what you're describing is the cultural story.
Yeah. 100%.
That we remain rugged individualists to the end.
At the expense of connection and at the expense of.
It's very problematic.
Because the I can never remember. I think it's a Harvard study that says the biggest indicator of a happy and satisfying life is connections with, and it, it doesn't have to be family, it's neighborhood connections, whatever. I watched something the other day. I can't remember which part of Australia, but a lady, I think she or a friend of hers lost her husband quite young and she had young kids. And she got together 23 people to buy this big piece of land. And they now, there's 100 people there. I can't remember how many families, but it's like they've gone back to the old way of, you know, multiple generations. So if a kid's sick or a mum's sick or whatever, like it, and the kids just, they're free range, it's like 150 acres, so a decent chunk of land. But the kids free range, they've got walkie-talkies if they need to be called back. But, you know, and there's a community garden and community chickens and everything. And I just thought, and there's one little lady there that had built this house like a an old like hobbit's, you know, the round doors. Like she's very quirky. I was like, oh my God, I'd love to interview you. I think you'd be an absolute card. And but she was saying, you know, my grandchildren and my son are overseas. I don't have any other family connections here. I think I would have already passed away had it not been for me actually choosing to move here. Because and then she's saying, you know, I have this whiz bang juicer and people are in and out all day borrowing the juicer and like little things like that. And I thought, what a beautiful way to be living.
It reminds me of the 70s too.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's all the old commune.
Yeah, commune.
Which is all based on, when we were talking about our cultural stories, I was thinking, well, if you're white and if you are in this culture, there are many wiser cultures.
Way wiser.
Don't do this. Yes.
Way wiser.
Don't do this. Yes. They stay communal. There's a lot of wisdom. And of course, you know, Indigenous folks already knew that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're just the ones that always, and it's so funny, isn't it? I was traveling down one of our freeways the other day, and there was obviously a new development, and it was all, you know, the same, like the Truman Show almost. Like they're all the same, but they're slightly different colors. And I'm like, we all live in our own little boxes, and we're not going to talk to each other. And we don't, like, I live in the country, so very different where I live. There is a much more community feel. And, you know, you go and get your coffee from the same person every day, and the butcher's the person that you know from the footy club and all of those things. And that's one of the reasons why we moved here, simpler but more connected life. And we wanted our kids to grow up where they could free range pretty much as well. But I was looking at these boxes from the freeway, and I'm thinking every single one of them will have their own little tiny contained whatever it is, whether it's a single person, a couple or whatever.
Yeah.
And we don't even see each other anymore. Like we don't, you know, we don't actually, yeah.
And then the pandemic kind of sealed the deal on that one too.
What's that?
The pandemic kind of sealed the deal on that. Yes. Yeah. Kind of accelerated that.
Mm-hmm. Is there a natural uptake though on the other side of the pandemic? I feel like here we are more motivated to get connected post-pandemic.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. I certainly showed where our society was most not working.
Mm. Exactly.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah. And the older people went first, and that seemed to be, I mean, it really showed the ageism.
Yeah.
It was highlighted greatly.
I tell you that what, my time in aged care, my job, I worked in aged care for about 18 months, and my job was, I was lucky enough to work in a company where they were quite forward thinking with their, you know, I don't know whether it's the same there, but in aged care facilities here, they used to have this thing called the leisure team, and the leisure team was kind of code for, we might have a colouring in session once a week, and we might have a sing-along session once a week, but it was in general pretty not individualized, you know, using all of the boxes that we've just talked about, like old people must like singing and they must like coloring in. Well, when I went there, I was employed to create a program that was based on individual preferences. And we had I'm so grateful. I had a team of four. I'm still really good friends with one of them's moved to Adelaide, and I talked to him just the other day, but just really good hearted people. And we, you know, there's 110 residents and only four of us. It's a lot of people, but we took the time to find out about each person and what their likes and dislikes and what they did and didn't like to do. And we ended up having this complete turning around of the idea that once you're in aged care, you know, your family shoves you there because no one's willing to do the elder work of looking after you. And I'm talking, you know, gross generalization, but it was really interesting once we started paying attention to the individual rather than the institution that all of this gold came out of it. We had, you know, gentlemen building things in the woodwork shed and then a whole team of these, you know, a lot of crafty older ladies in aged care, but we started doing knitting blankets for disadvantaged families. But they didn't just do, like, that was the kind of the normal way of doing things. But what we then did was we actually got the individual person who made the blanket and the family that it ended up for to meet and create these relationships. And then we had the kids coming in, and it was just so beautiful. Unfortunately, the pandemic put an end to most of that. But Yeah, I feel like the connection and the just spending time, mm-hmm. because I feel like a lot of the time part of ageism is not like feeling like almost that person doesn't have a need to be seen and heard.
Well, loss of identity. I mean, the only identifying factor being their age, because actually the older we get, the more unique we are. It's the most heterogeneous group of people that exists on the planet.
Yes.
We've all had so many different kinds of life experiences and different bodies and body processes and diseases and medications and exercises and all sorts of things that make our experiences more and more and more unique and different. So kind of checking in with each of those individuals and letting go of all those assumptions. You're right. I mean, just assuming that someone in a facility would like to do this and that without, because it's easier on the institution.
Yeah, it's easier on the institution. And unfortunately, you know, as with, you know, why does any system of oppression, you know, why is it created in the first place? A lot of the people that benefit are people that make the money out of it. And of course, that's the the case in the ageism end of things as well.
Absolutely.
When you feel into liberation from ageism, if we were to like the same sort of picture that you painted for us with liberation.
Yes.
If you felt into what it would be like for, so most people that are listening to this are kind of about 39 to 55-ish.
Mm, okay.
Can you paint us a picture of crossing through those threshold years and being free of the types of things that we're talking about as far as, you know, aging bodies or aging women, really?
Yeah, I would say that I think it's so important to look at this early in your 30s, if not earlier. I have a really wise friend who's talking to her teenage daughters about like their ideas of what aging is. And we have research now that shows that if you have negative bias about aging, your own aging will not go well.
No, right? No. Yep.
It decreases your life expectancy by 7.5 years. It's very real.
Whoa!
Yes, this is Becky Levy's work. The book Breaking the Age Code is fantastic. Definitely will highly recommend it. Yep. But the way you see aging affects your own body's experience, your own development of dementia, even if you have genetic markers for Alzheimer's disease. If you have positive beliefs about aging, your experience is very different.
Yeah.
So it's wise to go ahead and look at this. Mm. Go ahead and look at what you believe to be true about aging.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to be able to participate fully in work if they choose, in relationships in whatever way they choose, in sex if they choose, in fashion if they choose, and healthcare in the way that they would choose.
Yes.
Like any aspect of life in the way that they would like at any age.
Mm.
That's the way I see it.
Mm.
It's like trying not to believe that aging puts you in this like box.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like anything, negative bias, you know.
Yeah.
Goodness. If you go back to original mindset, like what you believe to be true is one of the biggest filters that your brain uses to show you or not show you the things in your reality.
It's very real.
Yeah. I've got work to do with my teenage daughters. I talk to them all the time about menopause to the point where one of them said to me the other day, can we have Sunday night dinner without talking about menopause? And I was like, no, because one day you'll be going through it and these young men at the table may or may not be still your partners, but they will be partnering someone else eventually going through it if that happens. You know, I'm making grand assumptions, but, you know, and the more that, because I was noticing myself, it's kind of similar to what you were saying. I was noticing that what I was talking about with menopause was all the negative stuff, like, oh my God, I'm so hot. Oh my God. And I was buying into Anne-Marie McQueen from Hot Flash. She uses the term entertainment, like, I am not for your entertainment. Menopause is not entertainment. But I was doing that. I was, you know, really I was only talking about that sort of thing. And I wasn't talking about this deep knowing that was right. bubbling to the surface of all of the things that right. I can not take forward, and old pain that used to keep me stuck that now is like, oh, and I can still, you know, all of those things. So I've changed the way that I talk to them about it, because I don't want them to just have the, right. you know, I'm hot and I'm feeling a bit crazy. Yes. That is definitely yes. not. But I will start talking about the aging thing in the end, because unfortunately for them, they don't have, I mean, they have grandparents, but yeah, some of what their grandparents are experiencing is probably not on the mm-hmm. positive end of the spectrum. Whereas if they were around yeah. when, yeah, my dad was bouncing mm-hmm. around and, you know, he was volunteering at a community center called, oh my goodness, Meals on Wheels, peeling yes. potatoes. We worked out that he used to peel something like 50 kilos of potatoes in a week. And that was his job. For the old people, and this is when he was about 85 and he was peeling potatoes for 60-year-olds.
I think I would have liked him a lot.
So funny. But, yeah, I think you're right, is the more that we talk to, because as I said before, I don't feel like I can change too much about, well, I can't change anything about what I did when the kids were little, but conversations mm-hmm. that we have, mm-hmm. Yeah. And
as with most things about body relationship,
yes.
kids are learning from yeah. their parents' experience, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Their parents' mm-hmm. like belief systems and behaviors.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got a lot of power there.
Oh, geez, if I could go back in time. But anyway, we can't.
Like you can also heal, right? It's like you can always repair. You can yeah. always repair.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very, that's
I do true. Talk a lot about that to my kids of like, you know,
yeah.
the way yeah, that I used to see things versus the way that I see now. And even that, I think it's important that we speak about how points of view and biases right. and ideas and yeah. stories can change yeah. and shift.
You can't know until you know.
Let me ask you, so you've got grandkids.
Yes, but they're very young, 2 and 4. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful.
Right. Yeah, soon to be 2 and 4.
Oh, so gorgeous. I yeah. cannot wait. Again, not hurrying, right. not wishing this too early. When you think about the world that they, they're youngsters in, how do you most, or actually probably an easier way of asking this question is, when you talk about bodies and food or whatever, what type of, sentiment, feeling, do you, how does that, what does that look like?
Well, you know, I'm a dietitian, so I've got all of these. I'm not only a dietitian, but I'm a dietitian who's been working for 35 years in eating disorder recovery.
Yes.
So I want them to feel confident and comfortable in their bodies and yes. resilient against the crazy that I know yes. they're going to hear.
That they will
they're probably
be
already here. Yeah, I mean, they're probably already here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
just to really help them maybe have openness toward going, what does that mean? What is yeah. what are you talking about?
Yeah. That doesn't feel right to me.
Yeah, yeah, mm. yeah. All mm. of that, like your body is yours and nobody can like make you feel yeah. any kind of way. Yeah. No. All of no. that. Of course, I just really want to wrap them up.
Yes.
Yeah. But I know better. I know that
yeah.
we can always just keep talking. Just keep
yeah.
talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Keep talking and demonstrating, as you said.
Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, my Brian. Goodness.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I want
for
to express. Mm-hmm. Well, I have been wanting to talk about this intersection of like what it's like to be pro-aging and what it's like to want body liberation and body yes. diversity. And I've found interest in people who are wanting to talk about eating disorder recovery and body mm-hmm. liberation mm-hmm. to like take a good look at ageism within those cultures.
Yeah.
But the pro-aging folks don't really want to talk about this. So I really appreciate you having this. I don't know that I identify you as someone who is pro-aging and really talking about menopause a great deal.
Yeah.
Why? I think it's just slow change. I think there's a lot of fear. I think there's a lot of health anxiety.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of pressure around like strength training, eating lots of protein so that we keep our bodies strong, and a lot of pressure around belly fat and restricting carbs.
Oh, gosh.
I think that's deeply held, deeply held. And there's not a lot of openness for this conversation. So I really appreciate you bringing this.
Oh, I'm really appreciating that. It was funny when you reached out to me, I'd already got you on my to pitch to list. That's I was great. Like, this lady in her work. Because it all makes sense to me that this is a natural time of getting really curious about all the stories that are keeping us the opposite of liberated.
I agree. Like,
because, you know, we probably, well, certainly I will, and again, I'm aware that I can't speak for everyone, but I find myself in a blessed position where I do not have too much demand on me at all. Like, my young people mothering is being done, and I have space at the moment. And to me, I just think if we don't look at this stuff now, then I could waste another 30 years stealing precious moments. And the other thing, I saw just not too long ago on social media, someone was talking about, I have to be careful here because I don't want to be too negative. I saw someone put a post up that was talking about the quality of skin. And the underlying thing was you've got to take care of this certain skin because otherwise it will show your age. And I had just heard, and it was only coincidental, but I have a friend in Melbourne who has a close family friend who just that week, probably two nights before, died overnight of a heart attack. And I think she was about 53, 54, same age group that these people. And there's all these comments about, oh, my God, we can't. Da, da, da. And I just
thought,
are we missing the point? Missing the point? Because we could be spending our entire lives worried about looking too old or too big or too othered, whatever. And we could be literally stealing, well, we are, no matter whether we die tomorrow or die in 50 years' time, like, you know, not 50, far out, that would be, oh, I could, maybe. Good. I'd be almost 100. That'd be impressive. But yeah, I just think, I don't, anyone who talks of any liberation from the stories that can limit our joy and our vitality and our connection and the true zest of life, like squeezing the juice out of life, I want to talk to, because I just think this is the time. If we're not asking these questions now, when will we ask them?
Yeah, maybe I lost my best friend when I was 55.
Oh,
so
sweetheart.
I think that totally changed a lot of the way I see this aging thing.
You
wake the fuck up.
Yeah, wake the fuck up and stop wasting your precious fucking time worried about shit that does not matter. And all,
I hold both to be true. I 100% agree with you. You know that's where I stand.
Yeah.
And I have compassion for people who feel caught and frightened and pulled. And I hope
100%.
I hope that they can hear that there's another way.
Yeah. And even if there's just a tiny inkling of the freedom, and particularly when you painted that liberation picture and feeling of that expansiveness, like if that is like the complete opposite of how you're feeling.
Yeah, the constriction, the wanting to shrink and not take up space and be quiet. And we're oppressed.
There's a right way and a wrong way. And it's like there's not a right way and a wrong way, there's your way. And so much more space, so much more Yeah. Yeah. I'm very, joy. Very grateful.
Yeah, I'm very, very grateful that you were interested.
Thank you so much. Where can people find you? Because I know you do one-on-one work and group programs, but you also supervise other dietitians and all sorts of things. So can you tell us where to find you in the world?
Yes, it's just my name, my website is my name, Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, Benfield.com. Beautiful. And on social media, I'm Aging Body Liberation.
Yes.
So it's pretty straightforward.
Beautiful, 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 beautiful. Love it. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing everything you have for our audience, and a particular personal thank you for just reminding me why not to listen to that voice that's trying to, suck me back in. It's been really strong lately, and I've been like, come on, you know. And I think it's the same with any sort of recovery when you have that voice that is trying to seduce you back. It's just time to look more. But, yeah, our chat has certainly given me lots to feel into.
Happy to remind you anytime you need a reminder. Happy to remind you.
I'll be like, Deb, tell me again.
I'll just say one more time, remember?
Tell me again. One more time for those at the back. thank you, beautiful lady. There was a few different things that we mentioned, but I'll put everything in the show notes for anyone that's listening. There's a couple of books that we talked about, and also The Wiser Than Me with Jane Fonda. I'll put in the show notes. So good. Thank you, beautiful. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening into today's episode. If you love the show, as I hope you do, please take the time to subscribe on your favorite pod listening platform and rate and review. And for bonus points, if you have a friend or someone who popped to mind as you were listening to this episode, why not hit the share link wherever you're listening and send them a little love bomb. Like, listen to this. Did you know this is normal? I really, really, really would love to get these beautiful stories into the hearts and ears and minds of so many more midlife mavens, and your help spreading the love is truly, truly appreciated. Thank you so much. I'm Kylie Patchett, your host, and have a spectacular day.